So let's get started. Recognize that most of us are not very accurate in judging our eating. Even dietitians who have extensively studied food and their nutritional values tend to underestimate the amount that they eat in a day. Since you won't be able to rely on your general impressions to get an accurate picture of your eating patterns, it'll be necessary to record your emotional eating for a week or two in order to really understand when you're eating in response to emotions. Many of my patients object when I suggest that they monitor their eating, but once they try it, they find it really wasn't as difficult as they thought it would be. Although you might want to get a complete picture of all your eating, it's not necessary to record eating that isn't related to emotions. For example, if you're hungry and you're having a meal, it's probably not emotional eating, so you don't need to record what you ate. But if you're not sure, write it down. It's helpful to remember that you're doing this just to find out about your emotional eating habits. It's important that you do this when you have some privacy so that you don't have to explain to anyone else what you're doing, and you won't feel embarrassed if you've write down that you've had a high-calorie dessert. But it's also important to record your eating as soon as possible. If you wait until the end of the day and try to recall what you ate earlier, you'll probably forget something and won't remember how you were feeling at the time. The simplest way of monitoring your emotional eating is to take a 3x5 card and make 4 columns. The first column is for the time of day that you're eating. In the second column, write in where you're eating and if anyone is with you. Make sure you include all of your emotional eating. So if you're munching on chips while you're in the car, frustrated with the traffic, make a note of the chips and that you're eating in the car as soon as you park. In the third column, write the type of food and the amount that you ate. You don't need to be precise, just estimate how much you're eating. Finally, in the fourth column, write down how you're feeling. If you're not sure of your emotions, write down what you're thinking about. After you've made your self-monitoring cards, fold them in half so that you can always carry one in your pocket or purse. At the end of the week, review your self-monitoring cards. Do you see any patterns? To help you identify your patterns, ask yourself these questions. First, is there a time when your emotional eating is most likely to occur? Usually, there's not much emotional eating in the morning and early afternoon, but it's more likely as the day progresses. For many emotional eaters, it's most likely in the evening when they're alone, but you may be different, so check to see what your pattern is. Second, where did your emotional eating take place? In the kitchen, by yourself, or on the sofa in front of the TV? Are you eating at your desk at work? Were you by yourself or was anyone with you? Third, which foods were you most likely to eat in response to an emotion? Do you reach for something salty like chips or something sweet like cookies? And finally, which emotion or emotions were most likely to trigger eating? If you're not sure, examine your thoughts and use the definitions of emotions I've just described. For example, if your thoughts were about some dreaded upcoming event, like giving a speech or going into the hospital, you were probably feeling anxious. If you had a negative thought about yourself or something that you regretted, you were probably feeling depressed. Thoughts about revenge or getting even are usually related to anger, while daydreaming or watching the clock usually indicates boredom. Knowing the definitions of the different emotions and reviewing your emotional eating records should enable you to find your pattern. When you know when you're most likely to eat emotionally, where it's likely to take place, and the specific emotions that trigger eating, you can develop a plan to make it less likely. You may be thinking that you already know your pattern, so recording your emotional eating for a week isn't necessary. Sally, a middle-aged participant in one of my groups, had been in counseling for years and was convinced that she understood her eating habits and the psychological reasons for them. With some prodding, she reluctantly agreed to monitor her emotional eating, even though she was convinced that it was an unnecessary exercise. When we reviewed her records at the next session, though, she was surprised to learn that in addition to the stress eating that she expected to find, she also had been eating after several phone conversations with her mother. During these conversations, Sally's mother usually offered unsolicited advice about what Sally should do to improve her social life. Usually this annoyed Sally since she felt that her mother was treating her like a child, yet Sally didn't want to fight with her mother. When the call was over, she had a snack to soothe the anger that she had been suppressing. The rest of this program will describe how to reduce your emotional eating, but before implementing any of these methods, make sure that you've monitored your emotional eating for a week and have identified your individual pattern. Sometimes it takes more than a week for the pattern to emerge, so you should keep up your monitoring until it becomes clear. Then you'll be able to focus on finding other methods for nurturing yourself without food and changing the thinking that causes the negative emotion.